जो रोगन के साथ स्टार्ट कर नहीं तो कैसे कहीं स्टार्ट करता हूँ.
ओके
सो आकाश डू यू नो एनीथिंग अबाउट व्हाट ह्यूरिस्टिक इज in artificial intelligence?
No.
So how much do you, what do you know about AI?
The part that I know, I have heard almost all of it from Elon Musk. Okay. And you know, like these debates, cliche debates upon like, is AI good for your future? Is AI safe and everything? But I don't know.
Now, what do you think, what do you feel AI is all about? Like artificial intelligence is all about?
I think
At the core of it.
I think it is basically, it helps humans to like just gain more ease, accessibility, or you know, just help people all around.
So if you think about it, why is it called artificial intelligence and not just intelligence? So,
because we created.
Okay. Yeah. No. So what is the difference between an artificial intelligence, maybe a machine that runs on artificial intelligence, and a machine like your phone, which does not have AI? So what is the difference?
What is maybe the, like. My phone has Google Assistant, right? It is a form of AI?
It is a form of AI, but it is let's say Android.
Okay, Android.
Android does not have any artificial intelligence built into it.
Okay, okay.
Okay, these are the apps that are built on artificial intelligence.
Okay.
So what do you think is the basic difference between artificial intelligence and Android? Or Android. A thing that is hard coded. That is what we call it.
Hard coded.
Yeah.
I think AI has a lot of, I would say, you know, if something goes wrong, it is not in the, like, what can I say, independently taking decisions on its own.
Is AI?
It? Not AI, but I would say the main concept of, you know, just solving and approaching the problem.
Okay. So what you're saying is AI takes decisions on its own and
the concept at least is the,
yeah,
I would say, analogy.
Yeah. So basically how it is
okay,
the hard code does not know what it is doing. AI is supposed to know what it is doing.
Okay.
I'll give you an example. If you have a robotic arm, okay, if it is picking up an apple, and it knows it is an apple,
okay,
then it has AI, is what is it.
Okay.
Even though the action is the same, like picking up the orange, even if everything is same, but it has some understanding of what it is doing.
Okay, that is
it. It is AI.
Achha,
okay, and our phones, our hard-coded, these things can get only to a point smart where we understand. So to go beyond what we understand, we have to take the help of AI.
Achha,
is what I understand from AI.
But like, how do you give a machine a, you know, a sense of acknowledgement for itself?
Okay, so it's an excellent question, firstly. So what they do is they explain the machine what an end goal is.
The motive.
Motive. Okay. They explain the machine what the motive is.
Okay.
And explaining the machine what the motive is easy.
Okay.
Because you can just code it in. Okay. If you want a robot to move from point A to point B, you can explain what a Cartesian is. Then you can explain what point A is, point B is.
Point B is, yeah, right.
So you have to say you have to move from point A to point B.
Okay.
So it will figure out on its own how to get from point A to point B.
Okay.
So this is what AI does.
Right.
Okay. And this is. This is how. So let's say a few people can move. Let's say let's take an example. Chess. This is a very good example because it has a lot of finite moves that you can like
play.
And it is very similar from human. The human can play the same move as a machine.
Okay. Yeah.
Because the rules restrict everything else. So it is basically one dimensional.
Right.
And AI thrives on one dimensionality.
Achha, okay.
Because it can do just one thing very well. And we don't understand, our brain does so many things simultaneously so well that we have this consciousness.
Okay, I got it.
Okay. So let's say take an example of chess, a machine versus a human playing a chess game. Okay. So a lot of chess players say, do you see that move? Have you heard of it?
Do you see that move coming? I mean,
do you see it? The chessboard is there, and it is your move.
Right.
Okay. And there are a few moves that you cannot, you can see the pieces obviously, but you cannot see that move. If you play that, you'll anticipate him playing this, and then you can win.
Okay.
So that is what they call. Do you see that move?
I see.
So this is what it is. So we expect the machine to perform in that level, like to see those moves that we cannot see. Machines have already perfected chess now, so they are smarter than the best chess player on the planet.
Really?
Yeah. Okay.
Based upon what, like probability and
No, so that's what. So again, very. So they explain what the goal is. So the goal is to
win.
To what is winning?
Saving your king.
No, killing the other king.
Okay.
That is the goal, right?
That is
the goal. So this is very important. Setting what the goal is very important in this thing. So there are a few forms of AI. So first is neural networks. Neural networks is very similar to how our brain works. It tests a few probabilities, and then again it has multiple layers, and then it keeps on testing.
Okay.
And then eventually it gets to some result.
Okay.
And it compares it to the end goal.
I see.
Okay. So similarly, there are regression algorithms. Regression, you know what regression is?
Yeah.
So regression is, so what do you think? So I don't know how it applies to you, but okay. I'll tell you how it applies to an AI model.
Okay.
AI model is basically, you keep on doing the same thing again and again, but changing just a few variables.
Not decreasing it, but changing it.
Yeah, changing. Okay. So changing, yeah, good point. So when you're changing your, maybe what you're doing, you keep on reducing something, that is you start getting closer to the goal.
I see. Like in terms of?
Regression. This is regression, right? Yeah. So let's say, let's consider we are playing chess, okay? And we set a function. Function is basically, you set a value, so you set a few variables that say that you're winning. Let's take an example that.
For example, like killing the other knight. Or
if we have like more pieces than the other one,
yeah, I get it.
Then we are winning. That is one function. So what does that mean? What are we doing is we are comparing our state to the goal state. So if our goal state is to
win the game,
to kill the other person, to kill the other king, then your that is your goal. So where you are at right now, what is the difference is the 22 pieces that are in between.
Correct. I see.
But I think there are 22 pieces, there are less pieces,
something like that.
16 pieces.
Yeah.
16 pieces. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is it. So 16.
Okay.
So you take one of his pawns. Okay, now he has 15. So you're closer to the end goal.
I see. Okay.
This is called a function. Do you understand?
I see.
So this is a module.
The different approach in a way.
Yeah. Like, it is a set of.
For example, you can kill the king. That might be a function. Or the other function might be you kill most number of pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what. There are a lot of ways in which you can anticipate that you're winning.
Yeah.
So
I get it.
An absolute value of how many pieces you have. Is the first function.
Okay. Just out of curiosity, one question. Okay. If you like compete two AI together for chess, what happens? Because they have the possibility of everything. Like, what is the word? I don't remember the word, but at least they have every, what you can say, planned mood already in their head.
No.
And all the possibility they have already, I would say, conceived. So
that is how AI trains.
Okay.
So how it trains itself is it plays with itself. And then it improves.
Okay.
So what exactly we are getting to that? So what improvement is basically you're getting closer to the end goal.
Okay.
And to get closer to your end goal, you have to set a good function. Good function is, now we took an example of having like 16 pawns. If you have 16 pieces, then you're winning.
I see.
Okay.
Based on quantity of the number of the pieces. Yeah.
Quantity is first function.
Mm-hmm.
Let's consider, there's no point in having 8 pawns.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If you don't have any the senior pieces.
The dominant pieces.
Dominant pieces. Then there's no point. So you're obviously losing. So this is where our function falls apart.
Okay.
So we have to consider a function in which there are more prominent pieces.
Dominant pieces as well as.
Can
you have two functions at once?
Yeah, of course. There is, you can have a combination of two functions.
Okay.
So anything that gets you closer to
winning
to your end goal.
End goal, yeah.
Is a function. Okay.
Okay.
So this so there is a value for this. So how far you are. So let's say 16. Is a value. So 16 is the number of pieces you have. So 15 number of pieces the other person has.
Okay.
If your goal is to kill all their pieces, 15 you are closer to your goal. 14 you're closer. 13 you're closer. 12 you're closer.
Right.
Okay. This is a value.
Okay.
This is called a heuristic value.
Acha, I see.
Okay. Heuristic value is basically how close you are to your end goal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So heuristic value, when you are at your goal, it is zero always. Okay. And it pretty much depends on what function you take. So heuristic value directly depends on heuristic function. So now we had considered a function which had 16 pieces on the board.
So suppose like if you are almost one step closer to your goal, the heuristic value will be 1.
Or you can, it can also be 0.1. It depends on the function. Eventually you'll get to 0 once you get to this thing. So this is how AI trains itself. It constantly keeps on comparing its heuristic values. What is this? My goal is this. My heuristic value is 3. Last time it was 4, now it is 3. Yeah, I'm moving closer.
Like, have you seen this movie called Robot? Have you seen that movie? It is almost like, suppose you have seen iRobot, Will Smith movie. So it is already pre-programmed, right? Those robots are already pre-programmed. Is that an example of AI?
Pre-programmed,
I mean, like, they know everything stuff already. It is already programmed in them. Like, they don't have to go through the process of trial and error at all.
I don't know the movie, honestly. I don't remember. I watched it a long time ago.
So I will tell you, okay? So it is like, you have an, have you seen this movie called Matrix?
There is a good robot and there's a bad robot. And
That is like, okay, let's not take that example. Have you seen the Matrix movie? Okay, so there is one chip and there is one CD player kind of a way, which, you know, they put it into a program that just translates to a good, I would say, a skill. And that they just put it into Keanu Reeves, the Neo. Have you seen that movie? Okay, so it is like pre-programmed. So Keanu, I mean, the Neo in that movie doesn't have to go through trial and error, doesn't have to do Kung Fu in reality to learn it. It is already pre-programmed. So AI, how we can like...
What happens is, once you start training your model, right? You start creating an equation. Equation of what is right. So what is the path that the machine should take to reach the goal the fastest?
Okay.
That path is saved. So it's called a trained model.
Oh, like how a Google Maps will give you the shortest path.
Very similar to that.
Yeah, I get it.
Okay. So this model is installed. So let's say we have Google Assistant, right? It is a model. It's an AI model that is in our phone. So they have tested it. So they have trained it first. So there is training data, there is testing data. So they train it on, I think, 1 billion entries. Then they test it on the next, I don't know, 10,000 billion, something like that. Some crazy number. That is how the assistant is so good. So this is how...
So by training, they just eliminate the glitches.
So how do you eliminate, how do you eliminate the glitches is by comparing constantly. How close are you to your end goal? Was the goal expected, this is what you got. This minus this is equal to this, so this is your heuristic value. More or less than what you had before? So it constantly keeps on comparing, and then eventually what you get is a very perfect model of what you want to achieve and how to get. So this is how most of AI works. So when I was studying this, I think around a couple of years ago, I could not resist myself from comparing what this does, like what these machines do to ourselves. That is exactly what we are doing every day, right? Our goal
is improving.
Every day we are comparing ourselves to XYZ. And then are we moving forward or backward?
Forward most of the times.
That is what we are comparing, right? When do we feel down is when we feel far away from our goal. That is when we feel depressed. That is when we feel bad. And so let's say you have a very bad function. What does that mean? If you use Instagram a lot and your goal is completely diverted. Your goal is noble. But the way they show it on Instagram or some other way is that you just sit there and you get rich. That is what they show. So that gives a very bad heuristic function for our brain to understand. And that is why we get all these negative false values.
Motives.
False values. And we cannot understand if we are closer or further away from our goal.
That is why
I think our brain, that is what we do every day. And that is what governs our emotions, is what I feel. So when I was thinking about it, I felt so compelled to just keep on comparing. I think it has a lot of philosophical inclination towards AI has a lot of philosophical inclination towards this.
Okay.
So again, we can take another example. So the training data and testing data, they are two different data. So the behavior of the intelligent machine depends on what type of data it is given.
Okay.
So let's say you have a image processing. So you know what image processing is, right?
In terms of?
Image processing is basically, let's say if you show a camera an apple, it says it is an apple.
Achha.
If you show it a banana, it is a banana. Okay. So this is, how does this achieve, how do you get to this point? Is when you like train, you have a training data, you have testing data. You train the model on as many you can, as many types of apples you can, bananas you can.
The thing with the Google Lens.
Yeah. And then when you're testing it, is what we are doing. We are testing it. And if there is an error, we can send them a feedback that this is not working.
Yeah.
So this is testing data. This is training data.
Right.
Okay. So this is a very neutral example. So if you will see, whenever a lot of people are doing facial recognitions nowadays, it applies the same way.
Okay.
So it is official statistics, I think, that black people are wrongly identified in this thing.
Really?
In the software, and white people are the best.
Why?
Identified. Yeah. So this is because there is a bias in the algorithm? Data set.
Algorithm.
No. Algorithm cannot. It is noble. Yeah,
it's obviously not biased, but how it can be?
Like, so the data set that is given to it, it is biased. That they give them very white dominant data. So the machine cannot understand
the number of people who just, what can I say, input.
Yeah, input. That the data that is given to it is very biased.
Oh.
So the machine cannot understand the difference between, obviously, really, if you give it less apples to show, it will say that it is a banana.
The probability of, you know,
finding it. Yeah. So this is where ethics come in. And Stanford has a great section for it. Like AI ethics.
Okay.
And a lot of smart people are working on it.
Huh.
On how we can apply these ethics that we consider humanitarian to apply to AI.
Oh, nice.
They are thinking so much. So it has a lot of philosophical
side to it.
Yeah, inclination to it. And I really like that. If you think an intelligence, like artificial intelligence, is a human, it is very similar. It is so the things that the human experiences is basically a training data for him.
Right? Yeah.
If he goes through a lot of bad things, then he's going to see bad things in even good things.
Yeah.
And same applies opposite way. If he sees a lot of good things, he cannot see the bad in good.
I get it.
So,
but the thing is, like, do you see a downside to it also?
To?
Yeah.
Yeah, obviously there is. And Elon Musk has been very vocal about
downside. There is one movie, like, it is an Oscar winning movie, and I personally loved it. It is called Her, H-E-R. Okay, and the actor from Joker, Joaquin Phoenix, he's the main cast, okay? And Margot Robbie. Have you seen that movie?
I don't remember.
You have to see it, bro. It is like one of the best movies I've ever seen, okay? So how it is, like, it is almost like 2050. And he is like a divorcee, I guess. And he's going through a very bad phase of his life.
Is that the movie where she kills everybody? No,
she doesn't kill anybody. It is she's like an AI, okay? He gets her installed into his laptop, okay? And I mean his desktop. And he's such a loner, he starts to, I would say, build a relationship with her.
I've seen that. I know that is a very bad thing. Even yesterday, one of my friends, Parikshit, sent me a video of how parents are offloading their parenting to robots.
What do you mean?
So basically, rather than being the bad person, the parents are asking the robot to be the bad person.
How?
So, for example,
by scheduling their task or something.
Yeah, and by doing things like, they ask the robot that tell the kid to do this or do that.
Okay.
Then the robot has its own functions. So functions like, let's play a game, or let's this is our new task, or something like this.
Okay.
So that it makes it more interesting for the kid.
The
kid starts liking it, and it starts getting addicted and attached to the robot.
But isn't that a good point?
No, I don't think so. I think when robots start overcoming human connections, right? That is a very bad part for the robot to get.
To humanity.
And even I think the same applies in the movie also.
Yeah,
that he starts getting connected to the AI.
Yeah.
And that becomes very bad.
The thing is, he starts getting like, you know, I would say exclusively, what you can say, he has an attachment with her and he thinks it is the only, I'm the only one who has an attachment with this girl. Okay, and basically at the end of the movie when he figures out and it turns out that she has the same bond with almost all of her user interfaces. That is like so.
That is just a.
That is a movie, machine. But it is like.
No, know, it is just a machine.
Machine, yeah.
Do
you
get it?
Yeah.
So it does not have human emotions.
Emotions.
And if you'll see, humans are very, I don't know, inclined to see emotions in things that 100%. They see faces on.
Yeah.
Anything you give them, like even if you draw like two eyes, nose and a mouth, our brain will interpret that as a face and then see if it is happy, sad or something.
If I had to give an example, okay, it is a very creepy example, but anyway, you see, you have seen this, I don't know if you are into it or not, but there is a category to porn called hentai. Do you know this? It is all about like cartoon porn. I don't know how people watch it or like how people get into it, but you get the idea, right?
Yeah.
You get the idea.
And that's what you don't need a lot to trigger a human being.
Yeah.
And like emotionally, mentally, physically. So yeah.
So if you think about this thing, okay, like the gender thing, I think I don't know where did I hear it or where did I get to learn from it, but there is a concept called gender rigidity. So how it goes is like, you know, the basic thing is the prehistoric man or the Egyptians, let's say, okay, they have a very old culture just like us. The Egyptians or the Hebrews or the Greeks, they had a person called shaman between them, okay, and he was the wisest of the group, okay, and there used to be a shaman in males and a shaman in females, okay, and the shaman who was there, he used to have a side of his like inner wife, they used to call him. Okay, so if you are shaman of your tribe, you are supposed to have an inner wife of your own. So whenever you take any decision, you don't have to ask your own like real wife. You have to consult with the wife who is like within yourself. Basically what it means is, even the female shaman, okay, suppose there is one girl and she's the head of her tribe and she's the wisest of the tribe, okay, so she has to, whenever she has to take a decision, she has to consult with the inner shaman, the male shaman with her, the inner husband, I would say. Okay, so it is that way. So basically I would say how it is, they had a myth that the humans in the beginning, they were half man and half female or half woman, okay, and gods used to fear us that time. So because of the possibility what we have for, you know, like most of the problems what we have now, most of the, you know, discrimination what we have is based upon how a man should be idealistically and how a woman should be idealistically. So just what you can say, negotiates with the extremes. So anyway, so getting on to it, so gods basically like feared if a man and a woman can be seen or can be, you know, observed in a certain way. So what they did is they split the original humans into man and female. So basically they just separated the two genders. That is a myth what Greeks believe in. Okay, so going on with it, it just goes on to prove a point of over-identification with yourself. You know, like boys are actually more sensitive and more, I would say, you know, emotionally, I would say, stimulated when they are kids. Do you know it?
Applies to me at least.
Yeah, I think so. And it is scientific evidence or something that scientific study. And female, like small kids, I mean small girls, they are actually more, I would say, inclined towards studying and they are more curious than boys.
Yeah.
And just when in the later phases of their life, they just give up their emotion for self, I would say selfishness, and they just care about what people, other people have in, other people have to validate her.
Okay. Yeah,
so
I understand.
In a way. Okay, so that comes with the point of over-identification.
Yeah.
Like if you are a man, you have to have beard. If you are a man, you have to be strong. If you are a man, you have to, I would say, I don't know, just basically don't cry at all.
Yeah.
Be strong. That is the thing.
Yeah. It is a very interesting point to think about.
Yeah.
If the myth is true, then all these identifications that we have, they're all gone.
Then you
can be yourself forever.
Yeah.
So there is always, if you think about, like if you like see around, there's always a stigma about everything that is related to gender, because they are innately very different.
Yeah.
And they are definitely not explained well, at least not to us.
Yeah. Okay.
Indians. So they're not explained. That is why there is some kind of void that is created of misunderstanding or maybe not understanding at all, which creates these problems between both the genders. And obviously both the genders are right all the time.
Okay.
Because when you are in a conversation with some other gender, some other being, male or female, you, I feel that there is always a misunderstanding. There's something you don't understand about what they're saying or what you're under, what you are saying they are not understanding. Something, there's a miscommunication.
Okay, miscommunication.
Which, and which is because of misinformation.
I see.
And misinformation is because of wrongly identification.
Over-identification
of both the sides. So men are supposed to be this, women are supposed to be this.
Okay.
And then there is another side of like being completely liberal. So being whatever you want and just not following anything.
Yeah,
that is also exactly, even I don't know. So I am talking about it is I can talk about from experience.
From
even
side.
I don't know what I am naturally, me myself.
Okay.
How can I tell somebody else to be natural, to be I don't know. So what I am naturally being, like what, like my inclinations are, what am I interested into, what am I interested in, even though if I have an idea about what I am interested in, I don't know exactly what it is.
Okay.
I don't know how I'm going to get there. There are so many nuances to it.
Yeah.
And this is all about understanding ourselves.
Yeah.
And
I also think like this thing, okay, like obviously if, you know, I think this goes on with contradiction to primal behavior also. I don't know, but I think so.
Yeah.
For example, I will give the example, okay? So primal behavior is like, primal thinking is a man should, you know, work for his family. I mean, work so that he can provide for his family, right? Usually like prehistoric man or the caveman, they used to hunt for their family. They used to hunt, they used to be strong, they used to be, I would say, smart enough to put food on the table. Right?
Yeah.
And the female used to be the one, the caretaker kind of a guy. So who used to be, used to be like, you know, just,
I got it. I saw more of a passive way in maybe earning and
earning,
more
yeah.
active in family.
Family, yeah.
And that is the perception they have nowadays.
Yeah.
And that is obviously changing. But I think as you are not like, what is it, caveman and primal, these things.
Okay.
I don't think we should follow those.
I think
that. So a lot of times what people say is like, even old people say that to us, that when I was in 12th I did not use a phone, why do you use your phone, and something like that.
Obviously things change, we have
exactly
that.
And if we wouldn't have been so adapted so well, then it would have been so hard for
horrible.
Us to even like understand what Zoom call is. It is so simple for us now.
Yeah.
It becomes so hard for us. So I think there are a few things that we should follow. Follow being like eating healthy, having a passion. These are the things that I think they come naturally to us.
Yeah.
And even to primate.
But somehow like these things they are in our mind in a way. At least when it comes to dating or when it comes to like primal attraction.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, because a girl who is like, suppose she has to like, she has an option between a healthy guy and a very nerdy guy. She most of the time will choose healthy guy.
Yeah.
At least in her subconscious, she will choose the healthy guy. At least,
Physically speaking.
Yeah.
If the nerd is like a billionaire,
rich guy, I also wanted to speak.
So,
yeah.
I think there are a lot of
and the hookup culture, or I would say just pickup community. Okay, they just thrive on these ideas, the primal instincts.
And it works.
It has to work. Yeah.
That is such the, I don't know,
man. It is like ironic for me in a way. You know, but I don't like.
Why do you think
like
it is? Why do you?
Because you
like
portray
it?
Something you are not.
Okay.
For example, I know this one. I'm not into, you know, the dating thing and the pickup thing, but still, okay. I've used it. Okay.
So you're not into it, and you've used it. Nice.
Yeah. So it goes like it is called, I would say, a pullover technique. Okay. So what it means is you talk to somebody for 2 days very intensely, and on the third day you just pull away. Okay, so what it means is like you go offline and you just don't talk to the other significant other for like 1 or 2 days. So it creates a sense of unpredictability, and it creates a sense of urgency that what happened, what did I do something wrong in the other person's mind. Okay, and it basically means that you have your own life and you aren't supposed to be, you know, giving your time to others so prevalently and so, I would say, intensely. And it works actually in a way.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of techniques in the same way. There are so many like pickup artists and what all.
Yeah.
But the main problem that I find it is like you portray something you are not, and you just attract the wrong people. And in the end, obviously, this all the you know, the portraying stuff, you can hold on to it for like 6 months, maybe maximum 1 year, 2 years. But at the end of the day, your partner or your significant other is going to find who you are in your real life. And at that time, if they don't, it is going to be
So. Even in the example you mentioned, it is, so he's not pretending to somebody else, like pretending to be somebody else. The what? Person who is pulling out.
Okay.
Is not.
It's not.
I don't know what it is called. Pulling.
Pull away.
Pull away. Okay. He's not pulling away. Like. So the person who is like not talking to the person like to the girl to the girl in that day, that does not mean that he's faking something.
Why?
He's not.
He can be playing Call of Duty all the day.
Yeah. No. Okay. I'm saying it is a way. I think it is more of a tool.
Tool. Yeah.
It can be used as a tool. Is what I feel.
Yes.
Rather than just because even girls don't like it when you're too into it, and they also want that.
Space.
Not space. They want the feeling that they want to be like
be with someone who is like
they want to be like caught. I don't know. I'm not exactly.
I got your point. Like maybe with someone who is already busy with his life.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they want them. They don't want all the time the dude to be there all the time.
Nobody wants.
Yeah. So I think it can be used as a tool, but there are a few bad tricks in the book that I don't think that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I've read this. I have read a book about this play, what is it called? Pickup Community. It's called The Game. We'll link it in the below in the
description.
So it's because it is about how the pickup community in America grew and how the author himself went through all the phases of, like, he first was a nerd like us, and then he met this guy who was like a pickup artist, proper artist.
Achcha.
And then he became a mentor for this author.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started working together. Then he started taking a lot of tuitions all around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And then he used to show, like, practically go to the bar and show how do you do it and what. So he also has a few tricks under his belt.
What do you think about it, like the, you know, the dating, like Tinder? There are people in, I would say, metros are a bit of like bigger cities who go on Tinder dates every day. They just find the girl on Tinder the night, and in the morning or in the afternoon they set up a date and they just go just do it every day.
I've been there. That was
you've been there.
That is interesting in a way, but I did not feel it natural at all. Like the only common thing we had when we met was Tinder, because we did not have anything that was common. Maybe we listened to same music. So let's say if I go on a date with a girl in my own class, so I know a few things about her. So she is taking the same class. She's
at least her inclinations are supposed to be parallel with you.
A little bit at least. So that it can spark something, and then we can go like experience different things.
100%.
So I don't think a lot of people have got a lot of out of it from Tinder.
Good picks.
And I don't know if it is bad or good. I think it is more subjective. I think it is not good or not bad for some people.
I get it.
Rather than
So
when you talk about Tinder and all of it, when always you're thinking about the one. What do you think about
most of them? I mean, I would say who go on Tinder dates, they don't think about the one or a long-term relationship at all.
Yeah.
At least in India, in India we do, but in America,
it's called matrimony.
Yo, have you seen this this thing called 90 Day Fiancé? It's on TLC. It is hilarious, bro. It is very hilarious.
You watch a lot of
things. No, I don't watch it. I have seen the review on PewDiePie. So. I just watched along with him. Okay. So anyway, I don't think most of them want to be in a relationship which is like a long term relationship. Most of them look for hookups or a single one night stand also. So it is very based upon the individual.
No, but what do you think about? So a few people I know, I know that they have met on Tinder. So for example, Matt Diola.
He has met
his fiance on Tinder.
Yeah.
So what do you think about like finding the one, even if you're looking for a one night stand what do you think about is there the one, or do you think there are
I don't think so. There is, like, I don't believe in destiny or fate. First of all, I just don't like the idea that things are not in my hand, you know, that like things are supposed to be some in a way, or you are supposed to meet somebody perfect in your point of life where you don't find anything else. I think it is based upon the relationship you build with each other, and it is not based upon a person, a single person. You know, you can build great relationships with a lot of people.
Yeah, I think
so. And if you both are very interested in each other, if you just I would say commit to each other, you just make yourselves the one.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's more about customizability.
Yeah.
So you are picking. So my friend Murtaza put it very well when I was like, when I was dating.
Okay.
That you are obviously going to have bad times.
Yeah.
But are these bad times worth the good times?
Oh, nice point.
is what he said, and it really hit home to me. Yeah. So if it is worth it, then definitely everybody's gonna have a bad times, good times.
Everybody has. Everybody
so you
has,
just yeah. customize. You take the things that you like out of it, and then you put them together. So you put them together, being put the things that you like in both of you together, and then build something, and then you can call it the one or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I think it is very. So I think it comes from our inert like. Feelings, senses that we want it to be perfect. So we have these things like I want somebody or something to be perfect. I want, so let's take an example of not only dating but also let's say phones, laptops. I want this laptop to have XYZ. It has to have this, it has to have that.
Yes.
It becomes a huge problem, right? Let's say if you buy a phone today, 2 years down the line, it is just gone. Useless it is. Why is it? Because you cannot customize it as you want. They are fixed, and you cannot
You cannot make your phone adapt to the better facilities or versions of it.
Yeah, and that is exactly what Steve Jobs tackled in 2005 when he released the iPhone.
Oh yeah, yeah. I have. I think you are the one who told me about this.
So
how they just keep on like getting the better, upgrading the better and better versions, and just like reselling them to other people. Right, like they get into on what is that word called, like replacement they do.
No,
like give iPhone 6 to the dealer, they give you iPhone 7 in terms of like very small amount of
money. It's more subscription. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about iPhone, the first iPhone when it came out, it was in competition with things like BlackBerry, which had like plastic keyboards.
Okay,
and this has had a complete screen,
like a touch screen.
So you could have the QWERTY keypad whenever you wanted, and you could just take
watch
it away.
You could just take it away and
watch the videos as we do now. So this was a major shift in phones. It was because you could customize the screen as you want. And in electronics there is a huge a field that is growing, and I'm really interested in it. It's called VLSI.
Okay.
I don't remember the whole thing. We will link it. I am interested. I am supposed to know. I know I don't remember. Anyways, so VLSI basically, what does it mean is, so when you have, what do you understand about a microprocessor? Microprocessor being the processor that we have in our phone. What do you understand about it? So does it, can you customize it?
I don't think so.
Yeah, you cannot. You can change the code.
The microprocessor you mean by like what we have, or like what is like the microprocessor
in our phones?
Snapdragon.
Yeah, Snapdragon. Yeah.
Okay. We can't.
You cannot process. You can change. You cannot change it. You cannot upgrade it. You cannot do anything with it.
Yeah, right.
You can only code it, and it can take. It can take only a certain. It can take a certain things. Certain forms. You cannot you cannot make it take every form that you want.
Okay.
So let's say like I'll give an example.
Okay.
It's VLSI is like a Swiss knife. You if you want, it can be a knife, or you can, it can be
a screwdriver.
It can be anything you want, whenever you want.
Okay.
This is customizability. This is what you want, where you want. So have you seen that Google phone that they tried? That you have a screen and
Pixel.
Then you so you have the screen, and you have this these small chips.
Okay.
So if you want a bigger camera module, then you just replace that camera module with a new camera module.
The hell, really?
Yeah. It was called Project R, I think. And it was very hard. The compatibility issues were very hard, I think. That is why they just cancelled it.
But it's such a nice thing to do. I mean,
exactly.
It's such a revolutionary thing to do.
Exactly. Yeah. So this customizability is what humans want. That is what humans need. That is what we were born for. Whenever somebody, let's say, even talks to us in a way that is just custom to us. So for example, they mention us and talk, we feel attached to them.
If I take your name and
and
mention you,
mention some things that only we know, only we know, or something mutual. Then you feel, I'm attached. That feels nice, right? So that this customizability is what we are built for. This is what we are. Naturally.
Yeah, it would be a nice way to like have your own phone for the whole rest of your life. And just, you know, for example, I have a Poco F1 right now. So it has almost like 48 megapixels, 18 megapixels. So with time I can actually like replace also.
Yeah.
I mean, the idea is great. Idea
exactly.
Is really revolutionary.
So what the problem is, is you cannot create these compatible frameworks that Android phones have.
Okay. Okay.
So you can, so let's, so customizability, a good example is why do we use our phones so often? Is because we can customize it. Your phone looks very different than my phone.
I see.
Software wise.
Yeah, yeah.
I have different apps. I have different everything.
Themes, everything.
Everything. Okay. And you have different. So that is customized to you. And I am customized. So what we are talking right now is customizing hardware.
Hardware.
And VLSI is all about customizing hardware. Okay. So you can have one chip and you can make it a digital signal processor. You can make it a camera. You cannot make it a camera, actually. You need pixels, obviously.
Okay.
You can make it a phone processor. You can make it a laptop processor.
How?
That's what.
Like,
so
you have to physically do it? Or
no. So it has a language called HDL.
Is this a software or is this
no.
like a hardware?
It is a framework.
Like framework, for example, the other?
So it is. It basically works on HDL. HDL is hardware level language, basically.
Okay.
Hardware level language is basically you are manipulating the transistors individually.
Okay.
Our phones have transistors. Phones have chips that have transistors.
Yes.
These transistors are permanently connected to each other.
Okay.
In a way that performs the best for the specific application.
Oh, right, right.
Okay.
Right.
What VLSI does is you can connect anything anyhow you want.
Okay.
It is all in you. So if you mess up, it is on you.
Okay.
If you are, if you do it well, it is on you.
Customizability means like a user can customize his own phone.
If there is a
you have to get it customized from a service center. How it is?
No, obviously it is not still in the phone.
Okay.
But eventually, I think it will. VLSI will enter the phone, and there will be apps that talk to this HDL.
Okay.
So let's say you say, yeah, I want the camera module to go from like 24 megapixel to whatever.
110.
Yeah. Then you can change that. I don't know if about so let's say sensors. You can change the sensors as you want.
Okay.
You can activate or deactivate the sensors as you want.
Okay.
I might, so this is my understanding right now. I might be wrong, I might be right, but this is what I'm learning and this is what intrigues me the most right now. So if you think about why we have the phones that we have, it's because it is very easy to produce. Have you ever thought about it?
Means?
You know, like let's take an easier example of shirts.
Yeah.
You have small, medium, large, XL, triple XL, whatever. Okay, so I think when the when the cloth revolution started, right? Everybody wanted like custom. Everybody would stitch their own clothes.
Okay, I see.
Do you remember? Like, I obviously don't remember, but there were times when people used to stitch their own clothes because there was no standardized clothes that was available. Everybody had to go there and had to find a tailor to stitch it.
Oh,
but what people did was, like big manufacturers did was, they created these categories.
Standard
categories, small, medium, large, XL.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they like made shirts similar in the same sizes for so many, like 10,000.
Ready-made stuff. Okay.
Ready-made stuff. So what this did was, no shirt was perfect, but it was not bad to just give it up.
Yeah, I see.
That is why everybody started getting adjusted to it.
Okay, great example.
And that is why it became, as it was easier for production, it was easier for us to
get along with it.
And nobody started thinking about it.
Yeah, because like the fitting and everything is almost close to perfect.
It is never perfect though.
Yeah, it is never perfect, but at least it is close to perfect and you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
And confident.
And I think comfort comes from using it
again and again.
You feel it's not a problem, it's fine. It's people who actually care about it get their clothes stitched, right? So you always have that option, but this is easier option. So if we can make customizability easy, like the App Store has done for our phones, downloading an app, not hard at all. So if we can make it easy for even apps to, like even phones to be customizable, then I think it will be a revolution in it will be next generation of phones or
because
next generation
there are some
of
things, like for example, my mom bought a new phone recently,
yeah,
and it has almost 164 something GB or 128 something like that,
120,
and she doesn't even use that one. But it was worth it. She thought she went for it.
And that's what. So you have 128 GB of memory. Memory is basically flip-flops. Flip-flops is basically transistors.
Okay.
So if you can use that 128 memory to, let's say, RAM.
Yeah.
Then you will have like the fastest phone on the planet.
If I play PUBG on my mom's phone,
it will be fast.
Yeah.
It will be the fastest.
Yeah.
And then you can also write some logic to it. Like if you are using something that is heavy, move all the memory to RAM.
Oh, nice.
And then you can move this. So all of these possibilities happen when you have these customizable hardware. Yeah. And that is like fascinating me so much right now. Mm-hmm. And that is what I'm studying.
Yeah.
So yeah, this customization and all of it is, I think, very, very interesting.
Yes.
So yeah, it was, I don't know, interesting,
but very interesting.
Interesting episode. I'll hope that we can have like these, a lot natural of these way. Natural communication. I think it is great. This is how we talk naturally. So
a lot is... more than this, actually. A lot more sensible than this. But,
yeah. Anyway. Okay.